Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you for joining us. Our guests are Alexandra Gutierrez of APRN, who joins us from Juneau by Skype, Tim Bradner of the Alaska Journal of Commerce, and Grace Jang of KTVA. The Senate moves closer to a vote on oil tax legislation, yet senators remain deeply divided and very concerned about how much they might be sacrificing to get a change in the tax regimen. Alexandra, what have you seen on the floor in recent days and in committee in Juneau?
Well, nothing on the floor yet, but it's been sort of whiplash-inducing, honestly. The week started with a revised version of the bill that brings up the base tax rate on oil to 30%, gets rid of the progressivity mechanism that raises taxes when prices are high, and it balances all of that with a $5 credit for every barrel produced. In a lot of ways, it looked like a compromise between the governor's initial bill to overhaul oil taxes and an earlier version of the bill offered by the Resources Committee. Then the Department of Revenue came out with their fiscal analysis of that bill. In Senator Lyman Hoffman's words, he's been one of the biggest critics of the bill. The numbers were staggering. The bill that they were considering would mean a tax break worth $7 to $10 billion over the next 6 years. The governor's bill only had an expected impact of $5 billion over that same time. So after that, the committee came out with another bill that plays with the base tax rate some more and brings down the fiscal hit considerably. They came out with that early Thursday, and by Thursday night, they voted to move it out of finance, with about half the committee members recommending that it ultimately be amended. Those are the same members who expressed some disappointment that they weren't seeing more enthusiasm on behalf of the oil companies for their bill.
Alexandra, if I might interrupt you, we can't really exchange hand signs here. Senate President Charlie Huggins, suggested he might be able to get 15 votes for a bill. What do you think?
If he were going to take a vote on that today, I'm not sure that would be the case, especially because if he can keep his... I'm sorry. I'm not comfortable speculating on something like that.
Let's stay out of that. Do you have anything you want to add here before we go to Tim Bradner?
No, I was just going to say, you know, the next step is the Senate floor, where debate is expected to happen within the next few days. So, yeah.
Okay, Tim Bradner, why don't you take it away, your perspective after covering this this issue this year?
Well, Michael, this is where the rubber really hits the road, because there seems to be a consensus, pretty broad consensus in the legislature, that something needs to be done. The present tax is broken, oil production is declining. And if we stay on the present course, we're going to be in real deep trouble here in a few years. The question is, what do you do and how much do you reduce the taxes? Can the industry really respond to bring in new production? There's a lot of numbers floating around. We heard consultants to tell the committee that, yeah, there is going to be a significant short-term revenue impact. $1.3 billion a year for 2 or 3 years. Hopefully, production will ramp up. And the consultants that I heard last night at the committee said that that really it wouldn't take a lot of production to make up for that and even exceed the revenue offsets. So you tend to hear a lot of people saying it's going to cost us a lot of money. What you don't hear a lot of people saying is that if there is a measured response from industry, you could make that up pretty quickly. Now, it was mentioned the three major oil producers are saying there are things about the latest version they don't like, and I guess we shouldn't be surprised at that. Maybe there's been some statements that maybe they would just like to have a better deal, but the consultants are pretty uniform in their opinion. This is a significant tax reduction that should move the needle and get new investment pretty quickly, and it wouldn't take, according to the projections we've seen, it wouldn't take really much new production to make up for this.
How do legislators deal with this? They live in the short run. It could be that they have to run, having given up $1.3 billion or $2.6 billion or something like that, and it's pretty hard for them to go to their constituents and say, this is working the way it's supposed to.
Yeah, that's right, and it's a real issue, because we won't know if this is going to work for probably 2, 3, 4 years. Now, we'll see some indications of activity within maybe a year or two. The British government went through a similar thing in the North Sea, and they got a they did a tax package that was very similar to what we're trying to do, and they were facing a similar situation with declining production, and it worked. They got new investment, new production, but that's why the consultants.
And was it satisfactory to their constituents?
Well, it's early to tell in the case of Britain because it's only about a year old, but it seems to be working. There's a lot of new investment coming into the North Sea, and that should be followed by new production. But again, you know, it's a gamble, and like Lyman Hoffman says, we're pushing a lot of money across the table without any firm guarantees.
Okay, thank you very much, Tim. Grace, Anchorage School Board Superintendent James Browder searches for another job in Des Moines, Iowa, interviewed down there, didn't get the job, came back here to a storm of controversy and has now left or will be leaving in a few months.
Yeah, the past 2 weeks, everything happened in a really fast and furious fashion. It started March 1st when Jim Browder sent out this email to the entire district saying he may have to leave the Anchorage superintendent job because his daughter and grandson are not well. And then the very next day, the Des Moines superintendent finalists are announced, and a lot of this happened, much of this happened completely unbeknownst to the school board. The school board knew in February that Browder had sick family members and was thinking to leave, but they had no idea that he had applied, much less to become one of three finalists. They found out when the rest of us found out. There was some frustration on the part of the Anchorage media. We were trying to get answers, trying to talk to him. He didn't refuse to talk to us. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, spoke with a Des Moines reporter on Monday morning.
Browder did.
Browder spoke with a Des Moines reporter who actually is a CBS affiliate. So we were able to get a copy of that interview. He actually did talk to two of our reporters on Monday night after an executive session in which Browder answered, we understand in that executive session, he answered some questions as to why he wanted to leave. And the Des Moines job offered at least $250,000, a significant jump from what the $160,000 to $180,000 that he's getting now. He doesn't have to pay back any moving costs. He doesn't have to pay back the $54,000 that the Anchorage School District spent in this nationwide search for him. Doesn't have to pay back per diems, anything like that. So it was a three-year contract. It stipulated that he had to give 160 days notice before stepping down. They somehow agreed to 90 days. They're being very adamant that this is a retirement and not a resignation. The difference being, I would imagine, to a prospective employer to say, I'm retiring from this position instead of I'm resigning. And he also said in the same meeting yesterday, where it was announced that he's retiring. He also said he would still be applying for other superintendent jobs in the lower 48. His family, the sick family members, are in Georgia. He wants to be closer to them. He was also asked by the Des Moines reporter, how would you respond to Des Moines residents who look at your resume and see several different jobs in just a few years? How do we know that we wouldn't just be in another one of those? And he said, basically, he pointed to his 23 years at the school district in Florida, and he said just the subsequent jobs after that didn't work out, and right now he needs to do his job as a dad and a grandfather and then superintendent next, but he'll be stepping down on Monday when the school board officially accepts his retirement, not resignation, and Ed Graff will be taking over. He was one of three finalists for the superintendent position that Jim Browder ended up getting.
And he has long experience in the Anchorage School District. It's sort of a, from what I could see, a similar path to Carol Como's, a previous superintendent.
Exactly. He spent 10 years as an elementary school teacher. He was also a principal. His current title is he's an assistant superintendent, and I think
they called him chief academic officer.
There you go. You read my mind. There's two schools of thought on who should get that top position. One school of thought is we should hire an outsider who isn't beholden to local residents. Exactly. Yeah. And then there another school of thought is, well, we should get someone who's familiar with the system. And Mayor Sullivan actually is in the camp where we should bring in an outsider. He's expressed disappointment that Browder's leaving. He said Browder's been doing a good job. He declined to comment on Graf being selected. He said he needed to digest that a little bit. So we'll see. We'll see. It happened all within 2 weeks and very quickly.
Okay, thank you for that excellent report. We will see. Alexander, of Representative Wes Keller and other conservative lawmakers have proposed legislation that would require welfare recipients to submit to alcohol and drug tests. This has been done at other states, but it doesn't sit well with the ACLU, Native Alaskan leaders, and others. What does Representative Keller hope to achieve, and summarize the objections?
Well, the rationale behind it is that government shouldn't give public assistance to people who, in their eyes, are wasting their money and time on drugs and alcohol. There's also the argument that by cutting off state support for people who would abuse it, you might save some money. But the problem here is that it hasn't really been shown to do that, because you have to spend money to get a state apparatus in place to administer all these drug tests, and then you had to pay money for the inevitable lawsuits that come after. It was in place in Florida for about 4 months before courts found it unconstitutional, and what the state found was that only 2% of people tested positive, and the state spent much more money reimbursing people who tested negative for the tests than they did in cutting off benefits. In Alaska, getting a system that focused only on suspicion-based testing of welfare recipients could be tricky, especially in the bush. Representative Benjamin Nagiak of Barrow gave fairly emotional testimony on the subject this week, saying that he himself was a product of public assistance and that he was worried that a bill like this could harm the children of people who use alcohol and drugs.
Was there some discussion of what would happen to the children of those who were found to be using drugs? Would the children in some way be able to receive the benefits, but not the parents? How would that work?
So basically the idea is you would have to sign a sworn statement saying, I am not abusing drugs and alcohol. So it's kind of an honor system, which could put people in the position of lying, which is a concern of Representative Paul Seedon. Representative Keller defended his bill on this point by saying that there are provisions that would allow other members of the family to collect assistance. But, you know, if you've only got one parent or both your parents are might have problems abusing substances, it's unclear what would happen. There are still a lot of big questions about the bill and not just on that subject. There was a lot of concern that the bill wasn't narrow enough. The director of the Division of Public Assistance pointed out that, for example, 90% of their general relief funds actually go to burials. And that's just one public assistance program. But not to point out the obvious, it's a little hard to drug test dead people. So they're going to have to figure out a lot of different components like that if they actually want the bill to go forward.
Actually, the drug testing of dead people is not so hard. It's doing something about the results. News analysis shows that healthcare costs are in some decline. That includes Medicaid costs here in Alaska and elsewhere. What might this mean for the Medicaid program and for the state budget?
Well, in the short term, it's good news. There are still some disturbing long-term trends, though, to be concerned about. What's happened, it's really a national trend. I mean, Medicaid spending nationwide is leveling out for reasons which, health professionals really don't quite understand, except that these things tend to go through cycles. A lot of it has to do with utilization, how many people are using the services. The underlying inflation of health medical costs continues to be showing some increase, but in Alaska, Medicaid, after some pretty substantial years of increases, has really flattened out in the last 2 years. Now, Medicaid is one of our biggest expenditures. It's about $1.5 billion a year, the program, half of which is funded by the federal government, but half of which is state funded, so it's of concern to the state budget. If we can slow it down. The Commissioner of Health and Social Services, Bill Struer, feels that one of the reasons they've been able to slow the curve is through intervention methods, various initiatives they've taken to slow the cost, and seem to be working. But in the longer term, you know, he's suspicious that this may be just a leveling, a temporary, that it may resume.
Well, I guess in 6 months we'll have, or maybe 8 months, or at some point we'll have an answer to that question of whether it's temporary or not, right?
Well, there's a question whether the governor will expand the Medicaid program under the federal to include a larger number of possible people. And he has actually indefinite amount of time to do that. There's no real time period that he's got to make that decision.
But my understanding is that's true, what you just said, but he would be giving up the money in the meantime and
yes.
could give up several hundred million dollars this year. Is that correct?
Well, that's... I think it wouldn't have any immediate material impact on the state finances, but what would have an effect, Michael, is that there's a so-called, what the health people say, the woodwork effect, which is people that when the requirement to have insurance comes into effect in 2014, who are people who are now without health insurance but are eligible for Medicaid anyway
right, right.
but are not signed up, would sign up. So that's called the people in the woodwork. That'll come out regardless of the expansion to other people. These people would sign up, and therefore more people would be under Medicaid. And that would cost the state. We'd be paying 50% of the cost of those people, unless the governor expands it. And then the feds would be paying for it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Grace, State Representative Lindsay Holmes faces a recall from aggrieved members of her former party, the Democratic Party, in her district. They're going around with petitions trying to gather signatures. Recall Holmes. Are they making any progress? And I understand she's been meeting with constituents.
If you can call a few hundred signatures, around 300 signatures progress, then yes, the Recall Lindsay Holmes group is making progress. Just to give some background, Representative Holmes was elected in 2006 to the state legislature as a Democrat. She decided shortly after this most recent election that she was going to switch from Democrat to Republican, and almost immediately a Facebook page titled Recall Lindsay Holmes went up. Weegee Tozzi is spearheading that effort. He's one of the organizers. Much of the opposition to the recall efforts seems to be coming from, well, at least in a public way, from Ivan Moore, the pollster.
He's written a number of columns defending Holmes.
Correct. And to bring it to present day, last week on Thursday at the Turnagain Community Council meeting, the Recall Lindsay Holmes people were out with picket signs, and that was before the meeting, and a couple of them exchanged words, heated words, with Lindsay as she was walking into the meeting. They were quiet for about an hour and a half. The legislative update was given, and then Lindsay Holmes' supporter, Steve Strait, stood up and said the Spinard Community Council didn't allow these recall people into their meeting. Turnagain shouldn't either. This is partisan politics. But the exchange proceeded, and it got really heated. She was called a traitor. She said, I don't feel like a traitor. She said, and just to give a little bit of Holmes' perspective, she said she didn't give much thought, she didn't even think at all during the elections about switching. She said it came afterward, after the election, when she was thinking about what kind of issues she'd like to work on and what kind of a committee she'd like to sit on. And she realized when it comes to jobs and the economy, she's more in line with people who are in the Republican Party.
You know, there's something really remarkable in my judgment about this recall, and that is all recalls don't have to be this way, but this is being spearheaded by people who voted for her.
Exactly.
The people who supported her in the election are now the people who want her to go out.
And she has said that she's gotten a range of responses from people who are very disappointed, is the word she used, to people who are very enthusiastic and everything in between. There are people who voted for her who say, you know, good for you. Good for you for making that change. And she said, I've always been a moderate. I decided I'm more of a moderate Republican. So we'll see. We'll see where
that
goes.
And this is a mini-stage process, this gathering the signatures.
They
have to have so many as
850 votes by May 16th. And if they're successful, then there will be a recall election in the fall. If they're successful, she will be the first lawmaker to ever have been recalled.
Yeah, I think there's never even been one on the ballot. There's been all kinds of discussion of it. But this was, if there was a vote, it would be the first time there's been a vote here in Alaska. Okay, Tim, is there a gas shortage in South Central Alaska? We keep hearing, yes, 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 gas shortage, it's coming. We even get notes from NSTAR and our bills that tell us to be careful about how we're using our gas. But now we hear, maybe not.
Well, there was a, there's two sides to this. There's a short-term problem and a longer-term problem. The short-term story is that in December, there really was a problem. NSTAR, it was cold weather. You know, we all remember those weeks of cold weather. NSTAR was short of gas, came very close to the edge a couple of times, had to actually borrow some gas or buy some gas from Municipal Light and Power, which fortunately had a little bit of extra. Then it warmed up, and that helped out everything. The interesting thing about this, though, is we find in this week's Journal of Commerce, we have an article that one thing that affected that December shortage was there was a whole lot of Marathon Oil gas wells that were shut off because Marathon was in the process of being sold to Hilcorp in Cook Inlet, and Hilcorp hadn't taken the keys yet. There was an extended antitrust investigation by the feds, and that kind of delayed things. But meanwhile, these Marathon wells were just turned off, and as soon as Hilcorp got hold of the keys in late January. The wells got turned on, and that helped out a lot. But really, warmer weather helped out. Now, NSTAR and other companies will say that that still doesn't solve a longer-term issue, that our gas fields are running down, and we still may have to import liquefied natural gas.
What they're saying is summer is not a solution, right?
Well, that's right. Next winter is still next winter. We're going to have more cold weather. And although Hilcorp is being pretty aggressive about getting those Marathon wells back on and even doing work on them to get more gas out of them, there's no guarantees yet. And we have all these explorers that are out there in Cook Inlet being subsidized heavily by the state. They haven't really made any discoveries yet, or they haven't announced any discoveries yet, so we don't know.
Okay, let's go back to Alexandra. Alexandra, the State House passes a resolution encouraging the Parnell administration to push the use of homegrown Alaska foods. Why did lawmakers feel this is necessary?
Well, increasing food production in the state has long been a priority for lawmakers. I mean, it's why the Matsu Creamery was created and subsidized for as long as it was. Governor Sean Parnell has stated that food security is a priority, and it's why there was the attempt to create a sort of government stockpile. This just focuses on trying to get the state agencies talking to each other and figuring out a way to make food production and security and food consumption of Alaskan food part of the various state agencies' missions. Representative Bill Stoltz was behind the resolution, and he gave examples of having, you know, the Department of Corrections use Alaska-grown produce instead of vegetables coming from California and Washington in state prisons. That said, you know, this is just a resolution. There's no money behind it. So it could be kind of a feel-good measure, but it could also get people talking to each other more about this issue.
Okay, eat more local rutabagas. Grace, the Assembly continues to struggle with the mayor's changes in our labor laws. More testimony, more dissension, and the mayor wrote a letter rejecting the compromise proposal, as the labor leaders called it.
Right. This is the biggest issue since AO64, the proposal that was before the Assembly to extend the city's anti-discrimination laws to members of the LGBT community. This is probably one of the more divisive issues that the city has seen in recent years. From the public testimony, the 20 some odd hours of public testimony that we saw, 99% of those who spoke were against AO37.
Are you sure about that? That's a big number.
Well,
big
okay.
percentage.
You're right. You're right. Unless I actually
I'm asking that question on behalf of the viewers.
Well, most, I saw a lot of the public hearings, and I listened to a lot of the public testimony. Most of the public testimony, most of the people who came out to the Assembly meetings and packed those chambers were anti-AO37. Now, the mayor says that is not reflective of how most of Anchorage feels. He says, quote, 10 to 1 Anchorage residents support his proposal. And he says he knows that because of the phone calls and the emails that come into his office saying, hey, I'm part of the silent majority. You're doing a great job. This is our opportunity to break the stranglehold that the city's public unions have on taxpayers. Keep at it. And he showed me a couple of those comments, two of which he pointed out are from union members. Who really knows, right? Who really knows? But the mayor did reject the union's proposal to take a one-year wage freeze in exchange
that
for
was
tabling.
Just, yeah, he made that announcement just recently.
Right. He sent that letter out on the 13th, and it was made public yesterday. So he says what we need to do is there are some contracts that are coming up that are expiring June 30th, starting June 30th and some next year. We need to get the rules set into place. So we need to get this to the assembly so the rules can be set in place before this contract negotiations begin. The unions fear, and a lot of union members have said, if this passes, I'm going to have to move. I'm going to have to sell my house.
This is a version of end of civilization as we know it, right?
And this is what Mayor Sullivan said yesterday. He said that this is going to be just like with sequestration. The day after, the world continued. It didn't come to an end. And he said this is just common sense. Unions say it's about power.
Well, I have to tell you, this is about end because we're out of time.
Sorry.
And this is the end. Thank you very much for joining us. See you next week on Alaska Edition.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.